Okay. So I will be talking about. So first, I would like to say that this is a joint work with Lutz Schroeder, Diebke Bremen, and in my talk, I will talk about generic theory of generic effects and monads, a topic which was, I guess, not touched upon on this conference yet. So first, a couple of introductory slides. So the settings for generic effects has been settled down by Modji in his 1991 paper. So he basically proposed to use a notion of computational monads to model generic effects like stakes, exceptions, non-determinism, etc., in a very, very general framework. So here we essentially use the category theory and some category to interpret our programs, and a monad. So it's a special endofunctor having some properties, which I don't discuss yet here, but just explain what it boils down to on the programmer side. So every monad comes together with a meta-language of effects. That's kind of a generic language for doing generic effects. And here are the rules for it, some rules for it. And the most crucial ones are these ones, the two in the bottom. So first one says that given a program which just returns a value, we can convert it into a program which returns computations returning this value. And then if you have got two programs over computation, you can combine them together. So you first compute your value and then dispatch it to the next program. So this T means modification of the type, meaning if you have A and then apply T, then you get computations return in A. And the rough idea of using this is you can just interpret your function space as just normal functions or morphisms of some category by modifying the type. So you just add this this T on the right hand side, and your functions, strange functions, side effecting functions, become just normal functions just due to this change. And we can treat different effects like this. So there are many examples, exception states, non-determinism, whatsoever. And so, for instance, if you have got non-deterministic states, then the function space will be interpreted as pairs of value state and new value new state, etc. And now I come to this talk. Closer and provide some small motivation to it. So we've got some meta languages for different effects, and we may ask ourselves what can we do with the language? How can we, for instance, switch from more richer from smaller language to broader language to introduce new things, new effects, etc. So for instance, you can have some simple language and then ask what happens if you introduce higher order types. Does it embed into it? Can we just like assume that we have higher order types without loss of generality? So there is a construction which does this job. So it's also by Modji. So there is an extension of a standard pre-sheet construction from any category to a Cartesian closed categories. And so suddenly your language, no matter which, with any effects, becomes high order. And we ask ourselves whether we can do things like this, but with non-determinism. So, for instance, you have some imperative language with while, and is it true that you can assume without a lot of generality, in some sense, that you can decode this imperative constructions in terms of non-determinism, in terms of deadlock tests, and so this is called this we call. Fischer-Ladner coined because it appears in that famous Fischer-Ladner paper about dynamic logic. So, and the other question is conservativity, of course, because if you just embed it somewhere, so does it embed or it just translates to somewhere? So the idea looks very much like a non-determinism monad transform, which doesn't exist, it didn't exist at least. But it's the idea is like monad transformer. And here I summarize some properties of monads which we are targeting. So instead of just consider any monads, we consider additive monads. So those ones which have deadlock and non-determinism, we call those additive. And there are a couple of variations of this. So for instance, completely additive is just when you can form arbitrary set index set sums. And so weakly means those which miss in deadlock. And cleaning monads are just a simpler version of completely additive. They have less axioms, sufficient to interpret the cleaning star. And there's a theorem then quite straightforward, that a completely additive monad is a cleaning monad. With this at hand, we can make sense of that translation which I put in the introduction slide. So if we have some distributive category and a cleaning monad over it, then we can define tests, so making use of the fact that 2, which is 1 plus 1, so it's a Boolean algebra, and T1 also makes a Boolean algebra because you can use sequential composition plus in order to introduce the meet and join. So you could just interpret this this question mark as a test function. And then you can define this if and while in terms of, so providing the side effecting variant of this Fisher Lautner encoding. And there is a theorem that if you originally had some other definition of if and while in other terms using fixed points and cases, so you can define if as a case, so then this definition and that definition should converge. Besides that treatment of monads, which I presented in the first slide, when you have just an endopunctor, there's another approach, it's an algebraic one promoted by John Power and Gordon Plotkin. It's just another look at the same thing. You can look at the effects as at algebras. So there is a formal notion of W theory, you basically formalize your effects like non-determinism, for instance, as an equational theory, and the Lavier theory is just a categorical counterpart of that. So you just interpret your operations as morphisms and objects as sets of variables, and then you can, for instance, encode non-determinism using this framework. So you can just say that pluses some morphisms there, etc. And the binding, instead of binding in monad side, you use just the substitution. So it's an algebraic treatment. So it's no wonder that you can treat non-determinism like this. But it turns out that you can do there is a sensible interpretation of state monads in this sense. You can come up with two operations, two families of operations, look up and update, and these are. This makes perfect sense. So there's an equational axiomatization of that, and this forms a Lavier theory, and it's just equivalent to states in terms of the monads of states. And so using this standard notion of Lavier theory, we can just capture finitary case. So in case of states, it will be just finite states. So this is boring, and more advanced notion, the large Lavier theory, where you do operations of arbitrary arities. So you can have states of arbitrary cardinality. And there is an equivalence stating that that approach of algebraic effects is, and that approach based on monads, they are equivalent on sets at least. And yeah, this is generalizes to some extent over other categories. And in terms of this Lavier theory, it's very convenient to form combinations of effects. So for instance, we can consider sums of effects, which is just when we take two signatures of operations, we just throw them into to one bucket. And so it's very sensible in some cases, like if you have a free monad, which is an input output, for instance, and you combine to any other monad, then you just transform it So there's an explicit punctorial expression for that. And tensor, which is the main topic of this talk, is like sum but modular commutativity. So this diagram holds, which I don't explain, just give an example. If you have states in terms of update and lookup, you've got equations like this. So non-determinism distributes over your other operations. So a couple of examples again. And it turns out that if you just tensor a monad with a power set monad, it's a perfect candidate for a thing which might be called a power monad. So a transformation of your original monad so that the target has all feasible properties as a non-deterministic monad. So I just list some properties which you get if you form this tensor. And the question is, you can do that, but pretend that we can do it, but whether the result really exists, because in large Lavier theories, not every operations of a monad provides a reasonable result. We just can describe that, but cannot argue if they exist or not. And the answer is, well, it's not generally clear whether they exist or not. This was posted an open problem pretty a long time ago. So we just investigated it, and there was a paper of Highland, Power, and Plotkin, from which there was some cases where it does exist, but didn't cover everything. So there are a couple of examples where it doesn't apply, for instance, even if one of the monads is a power set monad. So basically the problem is when one of the monads is unranked. So that's usually you can say whether the result exists or not. And there are many examples of unranked monads. And so we we started from this, the power set monad, and noticed that for countable power set at least, there is an interesting thing in terms of operators. There is basically just one operator, and all other operators are expressed in terms of it. For instance, you can just take a countable union, and then any other union is expressed in terms of it. So like this, you just duplicate the variable. And we turned it into formal definition, a generic one. So we just call it a monad uniform if it has a property like this. And then we proved that if one of the monads has this property, uniformity, then tensoring with this always makes sense. So, and the proof is basically just making use of the tensor law in combination with that requirement of uniformity, because the problem with the existence of tensors is because you're forming large sets of terms, and if you cannot apply distributivity, then you can get two large sets which are not sets anymore. And so the combination of the requirements makes it possible to do, because we've got lots of distributivities. And so there are the typical examples of uniform models are different kinds of non-determinism. So you can capture countable non-determinism, unbound, with deadlock, without, multi-sets. And surprisingly, this is also includes continuation models, which is very strange and which is usually a counterexample to many things. And it was believed that it's also a counterexample to tensoring. But it's not, so because it's uniform. So it's really strange that in continuation there's one big operation. I don't know what computational sense it makes, but it's like a parent operation for everything. And so there's a quick intuition to show that it's really a uniform. I don't have time for that. And so I come to conservativity. There was originally two questions in motivation. So the existence was I just argued, and conservativity. So for instance, we know that this exists already, but is it a conservative? So we can modify that construction for constructing the tensor and come up with another characterization, more informative one. So you can prove that the Lavier theory for tensor has home sets, the subsets of home sets of the original Lavier theory modulo some equivalence, which is like this. We call it rectangular equivalence, and here's the idea why it's called rectangular, because you can just look at these pairs as points of a Euclidean plane. So, and you just pretend that there is some rectangle, and if you have these two points in one set, then this is equivalent to replacing this to the points like this. So this is the effect of non-determinism. If your tensor was non-determinism, you shuffle the things. So a corollary of this, which is one can see anyway immediately, is that if your monad has at least two constants, then the tensor is not conservative, because if your tensor with monads with two constants, they got it identified. So this is the sort of motivation for this definition. A bounded monad, a monad with precisely one constant. We can rule out the other things because they are not conservative anyway. And yeah, so there are a number of examples. And then, provided you've got this boundedness condition, you can. So I come to this previous slide again. This is some criteria which is nice. But it's not. It's still not straightforward to see if your embedding is really embedding. So we try to look for something better. And so if you monad is pointed, you can introduce this approximation relation, which is like in the main theory, but different. So you can consider your terms as computations, and then you can just use this deadlock to replace some places in the trees and make the computation less definite, so to say. And this approximation relation is precisely this, and it works like expected. So if you have a list, for instance, so lists correspond to non-determinism without commutativity, then you can replace this B by bottom and get AC, and that's why AC is less than ABC under this ordering. So it's like this information increasing. And based on that, you can come up with a closure. So for a set of morphisms of LFG theory, you can define closure as the smallest superset of A, which is closed under these approximations and under a one more rule, which says essentially that if you have a tree of this form, and provided every tree which you get from this by replacing all but one with the bottom, this is in the closure, then the whole term is in the closure. It is a supremum, but it's a supremum of certain approximations. It's very much like Scott closure, because it's also closed under approximation, and so it includes not all supremes, but some supremes. And then you can prove that there is a variant of that conservativity result, saying that provided this closure, which is normally greater than that, if it's precisely the same set, then the injection this injection is injective, if and don't leave, this approximation order is a partial order. So it's like an alternative motivation for the domain theory, where if you first get some approximation relation, then you show that it really needs to be a partial order. Yeah, so this is what concerns conservativity, but the question is, well, we prove that these tensors do not exist, do exist in the cases where they were not expected to exist. So, but do they still exist in general? So that what about that question? So the answer is not. And so we did know that when we submitted the paper here, so we just learned it probably months after that, and we wrote one more paper about that. The counter example is pretty lengthy, and but still the counter example is pretty reasonable because I mean it's not some artificial construction. It's quite easy to explain. It's a well-order monad, so it's like Popper said, but we Popper said monad, but we consider well orders on the given set instead of just some sets. Yeah, and we proved that if you tensor it with a rather simple monad, like a free monad of two binary operations, this doesn't exist on sets. And a corollary of this is a non-constructive one, is that tensor product with the finite list monad also doesn't exist. So we can derive it not straightforwardly, but still. Yeah, so this remains an open question. Not covered, neither covered by our positive results, nor by the negative results. So it turns out that that it's the case of unbounded power set is simpler than finite power set in this sense, even though it's not usually like this. But in this case, it's like this for some reason. So I think it's difficult to prove or disprove. Yeah, this is it.
Two questions. The first one is about your result about complicated monads.
About which?
The adjunction between the
monads
and complicated monads. So is it possible to think of it again? Some kind of Lovia theory that's two-dimensional, like some kind of you would have some kind of character.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you can just tensor monads, and this makes monads over monads, right?
I mean, you have the notion of monads, so like an algebraic theory of two-dimensional theory of monads. Then the question is: is there something like this for complicated additive?
Well, I'm afraid I don't know precisely what you're talking about. So what is valid? So here it's just argued that if you have a forgetful functor from monad to additive monad, then you've got the
left.
Yes, in the functor category. Yeah. Okay, I think I understand that. So to reformulate it in two categorical terms. Well, I don't know. I should think about it. The thing is, it's a monad is a monoid with respect to composition of under pointers, and this is quite much. No. It's more advanced thing. It requires. Well, for existence of this, it's not.
Of course, it's a difference.
Yes.
But the question is there, for instance, in the case of rank, okay, there is a two-dimensional approach to it, to Lovia theory, using this modality.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
You
know that?
Well, I guess I know, probably, because I read lots of things, just we may not agree on terms, but I think I do understand what you mean.
Okay. So, well, the monad with RIT is the notion of RIT in a category, and it's kind of a natural extension of set domains for categories. And the question is all the Lovia theory can be attacked at a two dimensional level. So, would it be possible to do this for you, like have some kind of two dimensional approach with density? Thank you.
Well, the terms are always difficult. You saw the diagram and the terms of objects, so it's universally quantified over objects, and I don't know how to translate it to two categorical terms. I don't think it's...
Yeah.
So I guess not only you thinking about this problem, I guess there was a... So I also didn't invent this diagram, but... Yes. No, so the question is, I don't know. So the answer, I'm sorry. I've got 2 more minutes, can't I? Yeah, so that theorem provides some insights, I think. So we can just take your this is as a continuation monad. So I cannot say precisely what this large operation is. So I don't know how to interpret it. So we just prove that it exists, but what the computation mean of this? Yes, with the power set.
But then, what if you take an arbitrary monad?
What if what?
If you take an arbitrary monad, yes, and combine it with the conservation monad.
Ah, no. We don't have a Turing like this. No, so it's just the general one, which is not very informative. Yes, so the only thing that I can say is that if you consider this combined monad as a tree, then the result looks like this. So these are operations of one signature, this is the operation of the other signature, and here you've got some constants. So it's still better than nothing. But, yeah. Yes.
You worked on the perfect monad, but what about other kinds of non-deterministic, like probabilistic rounding, this quantum maybe? Like probabilistic rounding. Do you have anything to say about it?
Well, I just would expect that it's also uniform. This is my feeling. I mean, because these non-determinist monads, they tend to be uniform also, but I don't know the explicit form for that, of course.
Okay, let's thank you.